called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. Be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
You really do?
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
The goal ain't having that. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday, it's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
We're here, y'all. We are here. We have made it. We have arrived. It is the year 2026. And the NFL playoffs are upon us. Holla if you hear me. Jay Hicks, Justin Hicks. I am your host of the preseason podcast of the year. It's the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We are back once again. 2026. We started this thing in 2013. Now it's 2026 and we still at it, y'all. We still at it. Glad y'all could join us. It is late, very late, Wednesday, January the 7th. Probably going to spill into January the 8th before we're done. Although, this is intended to be a short podcast by my standards. Because y'all know I like to flap my gums, you know what I mean? So, this is not intended to be as long as those normal podcasts. We will get to the predictions for the wild card weekend of the NFL playoffs. I have some thoughts jotted down. I gotta tell you, this is one of the hardest. This has been one of the hardest seasons to predict, really, altogether. And the playoffs are even harder because there's no juggernauts out there. There's a lot of average teams that made the playoffs, and or just a lot of teams that aren't spectacular. Maybe not they're not average, but it's just not spectacular, right? And there's no dominant team or quarterback or anything like that that's out there. I mean, this is as wide open as I can remember it, truthfully. I mean, can y'all? I mean, like, think about the last, since this century has started, how many years have the Patriots just dominated? And, like, you could bank on the Patriots going on a deep playoff run no matter what. Like, you can't do that anymore. I like to brag about my playoff prediction record and resume on this website and podcast all the time. And I'm going to do it again tonight. And yet, I don't even have the luxury of leaning on Tom Brady anymore. Like, we don't know who's going to come out of the AFC, and we don't know who's going to come out of the NFC. When Bo Nix and Sam Darnold are your quarterbacks of your AFC and NFC number one seeds, anything's on the table. And so that's where we find ourselves. If you guys want to get in touch with the show, your best bet is X, okay? HHS Report is the handle. You can find us on Facebook, too. You can find us online. Just bet maybe not even X. X is your best bet to get in touch with us right away. But if you want to read all of our content, which of course you do, because, you know, you're smart, right? That's why you're listening. If you want to get in touch with all of our content, you go to the source, straight to the source. HipHopSportsSupport.com is the website. Thank you for listening in advance. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for giving us your predictions for the NFL playoffs. Before we get into that, I've kind of made it a staple of the preseason podcast of the year to do an autopsy on my favorite teams. And in this instance, no, I'm not talking about the Ohio State Buckeyes, who let all Ohioans down with the pitiful performance against the Miami Hurricanes on New Year's Eve in the Cotton Bowl. That was a domination in the trenches, the likes of which we haven't seen in a while. But really, that's, I mean, that's what football is. That's what January, late December, January, and February football is all about. It's all about the trenches. And as much as we want to talk about quarterbacks, and as much as I enjoy talking about quarterbacks, and everybody likes to talk about quarterbacks all the time, I get it. This game is still about blocking and tackling and what goes on in the trenches. That is what this game is about. That is what I teach my son. You want to know who's winning a football game? Watch those nine guys in the center of the screen every snap. That's going to be your number one clue, okay? And especially now when there is no elite level quarterback. I mean, if Phillip Rivers is getting off the couch, if he's throwing kids off of him on his way out the door to go try to rescue the Indianapolis Colts season, and he's going out and he's throwing for 300 yards and two touchdowns after not playing for 5 years, then that should tell you something about the state of quarterback play in this league. It's not great. It ain't what it used to be. Okay? So we can't rely on that. It's got to be deeper than that. Again, look at the number one seed quarterbacks. It's not just about the quarterbacks, y'all. So you need to look beyond that. Before I get into my predictions for the wild card weekend round, I do want to do, again, the autopsy on my Cleveland Browns. So not the Buckeyes, but the Cleveland Browns. As you all well know by now, they have fired their head coach, Kevin Stefanski, after 6 seasons. I will get to him momentarily. I want to start on a positive note and shout out Jurassic Miles, Miles Garrett, the king of the monsters, the best football player on planet Earth, as I've stated on this podcast. He's the best player in the league. I don't know when the NFL is going to do their top 100 thing. I don't know when they do that. I'm trying to think. Because, again, what quarterback would they put on there? Maybe they do it after the season. So, like, if Josh Allen goes on a run and wins the Super Bowl, maybe they'll put Josh Allen at number one. But if they vote on it prior to the end of the regular season, who would you put at number one? You cannot argue that Drake May is better than Myles Garrett. Like, as a football player, you can't make that case. It's Myles Garrett. Drake May's been doing this for an hour and a half, okay? Myles has been doing it for the better part of 10 years. It's not up for debate. Mahomes is out of the discussion. Lamar is out of the discussion. Josh Allen's had a down year. Burrow's out of the discussion. Pick your favorite quarterback. None of them are in the discussion. Saquon Barkley had a down year. Derrick Henry's had better years. Miles is clearly the best defensive player. And when you look at the offensive players, none of them are as dominant. Justin Jefferson had a down season. Who's the guy that, you know, Christian McCaffrey, maybe? Like, that's the best you can come up with? No, Myles Garrett should be number one when the NFL does their top 100. He's the best player in the league, and he legitimately broke the sack record on Sunday. So shout out to Myles Garrett for that. People just, you know, it's the internet when people are sitting here trying to pretend that Joe Burrow pulled a Brett Favre with the straight hand thing. Like, it's so absurd, the lengths that people go to try to make a story out of a non-story on the internet, man, and on social media. Like, Joe, you saw the get-off that Miles had. I saw a stat that said Miles had on his record-breaking sack, that was the fastest get-off that any player has had on any sack all season. So maybe that's why Joe Burrow didn't have the time to really maneuver out of that. Maybe that's why he just waved the white flag immediately, which was the smart thing to do, especially being a quarterback with an injury history. Why would you want to risk injury trying to break out of a tackle on a meaningless game in week 18? Like, that doesn't make any sense. He just took a dive, just like you've seen Peyton Manning do 1,000 times. As soon as anybody got near him, he just collapsed to the ground, which was smart. That's what Burrow did. But he was trying to win the game. The Bengals were down late in the game, and they were trying to come back. So it doesn't help his cause to just go into a shell without it being for good reason, you know? So for people to sit here and suggest that he was handing Myles Garrett the record, the Bengals and Browns are rivals, why would he do that? Like, none of it made any sense. But anyway, shout out Myles Garrett. And then as we look at the Browns again, Shedeur Sanders, I talked about him on the last podcast. He played poorly against the Bengals, but he got the game-winning drive. He drove it down the field. Now, you know, there's different definitions of drive, right? Like, not every drive down the field is a Lamborghini in the fast lane or on an Autobahn or whatever. It's, some drives are the old jalopy limping down Main Street, you know, in a one-stop light town. But You know, Shador got it there. He made about three throws on that drive that he needed to make, and he got the Browns in position, and Andre Schmidt, I learned his name this time, y'all. Andre Schmidt made the game-winning kick, so you can't hate on it too much. Look, man, here's my quick take on Shador. If you want to look at the raw numbers and you look at the QBR and the passer rating and the INT, the TD to INT ratio and that kind of stuff, you're going to walk away very unimpressed with Shador Sanders. If you watch the games, you will see a young quarterback who has a lot of growing to do. But you will also see a young quarterback with a lot of promise. And if you're being honest with yourself, you will appreciate and notice the promise that he presents. He was making passes that I think are worthy of top half of the league quarterback play. Like if you look at his highlights on the season, his best throws, I think, would rival the top half of the league's best throws. I really do. And that's something that Dylan Gabriel could not do. And he was constantly looking to push the ball down the field. He's got to clean up the silly mistakes. He's got to. Everybody gets that. But I was at the game in Chicago. I told y'all I was going to that game. Froze my ass off. If not for the piece of cardboard that I snuck into Soldier Field with me, my ass would have been stuck to the seat I was sitting in. Okay? But fortunately, my son and I, we had a great day down at Soldier Field watching the Browns get their teeth kicked in. It happens. You know what I mean? And it was unbelievably cold. I'd never been in a place that cold for that long in my life. But I got a story to tell now. And I'll spare you all the details, but one thing I did notice, in addition to seeing a slice of history, because Myles Garrett had a sack and a half in that game, so my son and I get to tell each other, like, hey, we were there, and we saw Myles in his record-breaking season, and we actually got to experience the record-breaking moment together. My son didn't see most of the game on Sunday, but then he ran upstairs and said, hey, did Myles break the record yet? I'm like, no. And then seconds later, he broke the record, and we just celebrated together, so I'll always cherish that memory. But yeah, one thing that I saw at that game in Chicago was Shador Sanders float a ball beautifully to the end zone that hit Jerry Jeudy in the numbers, and not only did it not result in a touchdown, it actually resulted in an interception somehow. So just looking at Shador's numbers again, when you look at his 7 touchdowns to 10 interceptions, it doesn't look pretty, and some people would even mention that it's far worse than what Dylan Gabriel's ratio looked like, which is true. But again, he had one interception that really should have been a touchdown. He also threw a touchdown that was about 50-yard bomb on the dot to his, what, third or fourth tight end on Sunday that was also dropped. He also had a rushing TD that doesn't necessarily get accounted for all the time. He threw that long bomb to Isaiah Bond in his first start at Vegas, the big play that put him on the map, so to speak. Bond was tackled at the 1-yard line on that play. That very easily could have been another touchdown. And so, yeah, I mean, like, it's like, yeah, it was 7-10 was the ratio, but, you know, a yard here, a catch instead of a drop there, and now we're looking at, you know, a little bit of a better ratio. He had multiple passes get deflected that went straight up into the air and got intercepted. I mean, like, he had, like, 4 of those in his, 7 starts. So, like, you know, again, Shador's got stuff to clean up. I think everybody knows that, but you're lying if you're saying he can't make NFL throws. Like, that guy has what it takes to be an NFL quarterback. It's the coaching part. It's the coaching part and the processing part, the decision-making part. That's what is up against Shador now, or that's what Shador is up against at this point. It's not a talent. It's not a talent question. It's not a question of can he make the NFL caliber throws? Can he be elusive enough in the pocket? Can he scramble and make plays out of the pocket? Those are all yeses, big green check marks in all those categories. So the other thing you have to realize is that, again, he was playing with nothing by the end of the season. By the end of that season, by week 18, Shador was playing with nothing around him. His starting running back was hurt. Both of his starting tight ends were hurt. His offensive line was 80% hurt, minimum. You'd even say it was even more hurt than that, which I'll explain in a minute, and his receiving core, which was actually healthy, is literally like the 32nd best receiving corps in the NFL, which is, if you, in case you didn't know, there's 32 teams. So we're talking like the dead last worst receiving corps in the league, and that was the unit that was actually healthy. But take away his receiving corps, and you're looking at the line, the tight ends, and the backs, they were all a mash unit, right? So he's doing all this as a rookie with limited preparation with the starters going into becoming the starter himself. And he still managed to go, what, 3-4 as a starter? He still managed to, I wrote down 3-5, but I believe he was 3-4 as a starter. He still won his first start, which no Browns quarterback had done. He still won road starts, a game on the West Coast, which no Browns quarterback had done in eons. He won two games in a row, which no Browns quarterback had done in eons, frankly, since like over a year and a half since that had happened. Just winning a road game was something that had not happened in eons since Jacksonville in 2024. Shador did a lot of stuff that no other Browns quarterback had done. Now, granted, the defense did a lot of the heavy lifting, but he still played his role in that. And considering all the injuries around him and the circumstances and the weather and all these different things, and the coach, who a lot of y'all feel like didn't deserve to be there, hence he got fired. Yeah, I would say Shador did pretty well, all things considered, if you watch the games. I mentioned the line really quickly. I'm pulling up something right now, y'all. So the Bengals played the Browns twice this season, of course. And once was in week one, and the second time was in week 18. In week one, the Browns starting offensive line was Jack Conklin, DeJuan Jones, Joel Petonio, Wyatt Teller, and Ethan Posich. And in week 18, the Browns starting offensive line was Cam Robinson, KT Levinson, Joel Petonio, Tevin Jenkins, and Luke Whippler. In other words, there's only one holdover from week one to week 18. That was Joel Petonio. Everybody else on the offensive line got hurt long ago. All right? All of them. All those dudes got hurt. And some of the backups got hurt as well. So it's like the Browns were really fielding like a non-professional starting offensive line. Because one thing that people, I think, fail to realize, people get mad at the Browns because they didn't have like 10 starting caliber offensive linemen on the roster. Like, we were like, oh, there's no depth on the team. That's why Andrew Berry needs to get fired. There's no depth in the offensive line. It's like, what do you expect? You expect there to be 7, 8, 9, 10 starting caliber offensive linemen on a roster? You can't have that. Nobody has that. Nobody has that. So to suffer 4 injuries at minimum to the starting offensive line, it's going to have an effect because you can't assume that they're all on the same level. In other words, just as every offensive line unit is, you can rank them from 1 to 32 and say, okay, this is the best offensive line unit, this is the middle of the pack, this is the worst. You could say the same thing about each group of backup offensive linemen. So not all backup offensive linemen are created equal. And I can tell you right now that Cam Robinson and KT Levinson are two of the worst tackles I've ever seen. And especially Cam Robinson. But it's like those guys can't play. Those guys, Cam Robinson should not be an NFL player, okay? And again, I don't mean to be cruel to him, but the point is just that like when you see some of the stuff that was happening there, it's like, how is Shador even doing anything with his group blocking in front of him? Like, you're assuming that when a group of 4 offensive linemen come in off the bench, that they're like middle of the road offensive linemen. No, they could be the bottom of the league as far as backup offensive linemen are concerned. And I think that's what we saw. You know, you can't expect even top end backup offensive linemen necessarily. And the Browns didn't have that, and it showed. My quick take on Kevin Stefanski, you know, I like Kevin Stefanski more than most, and I didn't think he deserved to get fired. I understood it, though. When you win 8 games in 2 years, and you've been there for 6 years total, I mean, heads is going to roll, and that's just kind of what it is. So I made peace with the fact that the Browns were likely going to get rid of Stefanski, and I also recognize that sometimes a relationship just runs its course. And so maybe Kevin had reached that point with the Browns. It is odd, though, that everybody nationally, for what it's worth, and, you know, national media, there's a lot of idiots in the national media, and there's a lot of idiots in the local media in Cleveland. Yet and still, everybody kind of panned that move to fire Stefanski, especially nationally. And everybody's like, he's going to have a job in an hour. He's going to have three, four, five teams looking at him. Like, he's going to get hired immediately. Like, the Giants might get him, the Falcons, whatever. You know, so it's like, okay, the fact that everybody wants Stefanski in their building should tell the Browns something. Like, maybe this guy's not such a bad coach after all. You know, the Tennessee Titans fired Mike Vrabel 2 years ago. And I don't know, maybe that was a scenario too where it's like, okay, this relationship has just run its course. He's been here for 8 years or whatever it was, 10 years. We haven't gone that far. Like, we need to shake things up. Okay. But it doesn't mean that Mike Vrabel can't coach. And we're seeing it now in New England, right? Like, the guy just got a change of scenery and a new quarterback, and bada bing, he's the number one seed or number two seed or whatever the Patriots are. So it's, you know, Stefanski, they fired him, but that doesn't mean he's a bad coach. Good coaches get fired all the time. A good coach just got fired in Baltimore yesterday. And in fact, John Harbaugh's got very deep Cleveland ties. His mom's whole side of her family's from Cleveland. His family's from Northeast Ohio. His parents went to school in Northwest Ohio. Shout out Bowling Green State University, my alma mater again. Making it onto the podcast again. We keep talking about BG. But the point is that John Harbaugh's got a lot of ties to Cleveland. John Harbaugh may want to get revenge on the Ravens two times a year. And Jimmy Haslam's got deep pockets. So if the Browns are at all concerned about the public perception that may exist on the heels of relieving Kevin Stefanski of his duties, maybe you just write a blank check to John Harbaugh. It ain't going to hurt the salary cap. You know, it's not going to hurt. You know, it's like the fans are paying for it anyways, because they're paying for half of the stadium that's going to be in Brook Park. You know, they're basically funding a large portion of that project for the Haslams. So maybe it just makes sense. Hey, let's just write John Harbaugh a giant check and let him come on home back to Ohio and stick it to the Ravens two times a year. Because that's pretty much the only move that the Browns can do that's going to leave them not looking potentially idiotic after this coaching cycle runs its course. Because if they go out and hire a 31-year-old offensive coordinator that nobody's ever heard of, who was the offensive coordinator for some other team where some other dude that was the head coach was actually running the offense and calling all the plays, and then they're going to bring in that guy to run our offense. If that doesn't go well, which it might not, then it's like, well, why did you get rid of Stefanski? You didn't know who you were going to hire when you got rid of him? Well, it just so happens that John Harbaugh is available. But if they can somehow, and I don't think it's likely to happen, but if they can somehow get John Harbaugh to Cleveland, well, then it looks like the Browns actually know what they're doing. And you can make a strong, strong case that they actually upgraded at one of the most critical positions in football, the head coach. But I don't think that Kevin Stefanski is a bad coach, and I do think that injuries, as I've said numerous times on this podcast, was the undoing for the Browns this season and in other seasons. It undid the Browns in 2024 and 2025, and it was the reason why Andrew Berry has struggled. It's the reason why Kevin Stefanski has struggled. It's the reason why the Deshaun Watson trade has failed. It's not because he can't play. He was not his best version of himself, not by a long shot, when he did play. But the signs were there that he was going to turn things around, and every time he was about to turn it around, Deshaun got hit with a significant injury, usually at the end of the season. So that's going to have an effect. When your offensive line falls apart like it did this year for the Browns, that's going to have an effect. When Stefanski's starting quarterback is traded away unbeknownst to him at the beginning of the season, and now he's got to start two kids in week three or four, whatever it was, that's going to have an effect on the win-loss record. And then you fire Stefanski for not winning enough games? How does that make sense? The line fell apart. The receiving corps was bottom in the league, and you got rid of his veteran quarterback. And you did all those things, and yeah, the record wasn't good. And yet, you're going to fire Stefanski for that? Like, there's a strong case to be made that he should have stayed put. And again, I understand why he's not in Cleveland anymore. But there's also enough ammo to say they should have let Stefanski go. Because when you look at the pre-snap penalties, which was year after year was an issue for the Browns, the penalties period year after year was an issue for the Browns. Two of the three phases have just been not just worst in the league, like the caliber of the worst in the league. I mean, we're talking like historically bad offensive and special teams. And Kevin's an offensive coach. The offense was, in some metrics, historically bad, and the special teams was worse. The special teams single-handedly cost the Browns like three games this year, and the special teams coach never got fired. There was never really any real noticeable accountability on the special teams part of things. So, yeah, again, heads are going to roll. You know what I mean? How do you not hold Stefanski responsible? He's over the whole operation. The defense is great. The offense is in the toilet. The special teams is in the toilet. And if two of your three faces are in the toilet, then your record's going to be in the toilet and you're going to be out of a job. That's just how it goes. So I get it, but I like Stefanski. And I'm glad that Andrew Berry kept his job because, again, people want to saddle him with the Watson trade, whether that was him or Jimmy Haslam or a collaborative effort, whomever you want to blame for that. It's on Andrew Berry's record, so you can blame Andrew Berry for that. That was a good trade, and I will go to my grave. I say it every podcast. I will go to my grave, y'all, to my grave. I'll be in the cold ground, a cold dead man, before you ever get me to admit that that was a bad trade. In fact, I mean, I'm probably going to get cremated one day. That's my thing. But anyway. Not to be morbid, but who wants to make their relatives come to a cemetery and sit around and talk to the grass? Like, I think that's weird. But anyway, why would you, you know, the trade was a good trade. The guy could play. They mortgaged the future to get him. And if he doesn't get hurt, then maybe we see the fruits of that trade and it doesn't look so crazy. In fact, Deshaun's probably going to be on the team next year, and he's still the best quarterback on the roster right now. So we'll see if he's able to turn it around or not, but yeah, he was going through a lot of stuff personally, so that affected his play. But the injuries was the main reason. The injuries was the thing. It hurt Stefanski. It hurt AB. But when we look at this draft that I talked about last podcast, it's easy to see why Andrew Berry should stick around for a little while longer and see what they can do in this draft, especially considering that they have two first-round picks. You fix the offensive line. You fix the receivers. You get a little healthier. You get some favorable luck. You get a weaker schedule. These things kind of fall into place. Who knows? Browns may be looking at the playoffs next year. But let's talk about the playoffs this year quickly. And of course, I spent 30 minutes on the Browns. Shocker. Didn't intend to do that. Let's roll through these predictions real quick, and I'll let y'all get up out of here. For Wild Card Weekend, quickly, in the history of the preseason podcast of the year, the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, we have gone 37-25. That's a 597 win percentage on our predictions straight up. All time, we are 96-57. That is a 627 win percentage straight up in the history of this site. Last year, your boy went 8-5 overall and 9-4 against the spread. Suffice it to say, I'm pretty good at this. This is what we do. Okay, we make these picks and they turn out damn good most of the time. Especially in the divisional round. That's when I notoriously cook in a divisional round. I should let y'all know that. But Wild Card Weekend and divisional round, it gets a little hairy in the conference championship Super Bowls. Still above 500 in both, but just not as dominant as the first two rounds. But again, I feel like this year is more about matchups than ever before, possibly, and at least in recent history. And it can really go any way. Like, it really feels like it can go any way. And there are, what's it, 1, 2, 3, wait a minute. No, 1, 2, 3, 4 of the 6 games this weekend have a road favorite or a home underdog. That's a lot. That's a lot. You could pretty much see any of these teams, with the exception of one, maybe two, but... Here, I'll put it this way. I can see any of these teams winning this weekend except for the Carolina Panthers. And even the Panthers, they just whooped the Rams in Carolina just a few weeks ago. Now, I don't see them doing it again in the playoffs, but to be fair to them, they did just whoop the Rams a few weeks ago in Carolina, and this game is against the Rams in Carolina. So, you know, this thing's pretty, pretty wide open. Speaking of the Rams and the Panthers, the Rams are 10.5 point favorites. That is a crap ton of points. I can't swallow that many points, man. I gotta take the Panthers to cover. I'm gonna take the Rams to win. I don't think the Panthers are a serious team. They're pretty unserious, in fact. They were able to get the best of Stafford that week. They were just intercepting him left and right. We got a bad Matthew Stafford game. Matthew Stafford does have a ring on his finger. You have to believe that the Rams, that he's going to be able to pull it together for at least one weekend in these playoffs against an inferior opponent. Yes, they're flying across the country. Yes, they're going to be on the East Coast. Yes, the Panthers fans are going to be going crazy because they never even expected to make the playoffs this year. I think it's going to be a tougher game than what most people are realizing. And the Rams aren't as awesome as everybody makes them out to be. Like, people think that they're... people acting like they were clearly the best team in the NFL midway through the season. Stafford was clearly the MVP, which he wasn't. That should be Drake May now. I mean, I think we should be pretty clear on that. Like, in spite of the fact that the Patriots have a pretty weak schedule, like a significantly weak schedule, the MVP is Drake May. He was better this year. Like, we don't have to go crazy on that. But give me the Rams to win. Give me the Panthers to cover. I just don't think the Panthers have enough experience at the quarterback position, at the head coaching position, and the Rams have all those things in spades. I just feel like the Rams or the Panthers are overmatched. You know, I don't know if the Panthers could beat any team in this field except for maybe the Steelers, but next year, if the Panthers make it back next year, I think they could really do some damage. We'll have to see. Saturday night, the Packers are 1.5-point favorites at the Bears. Give me the Bears to win and cover. You know, I saw the Bears in person. They looked legit. A lot of teams look legit when they play the Browns. I just don't know what the Packers do well right now, honestly. And we talk about, you know, I said earlier at the top of the show, the trenches still matter. Well, the Packers have one of the worst offensive line units. I mean, depending on the metric, I mean, it's a little hit and miss depending on what metric you want to lean into. Pro Football Focus had the Packers having the 25th best pass block unit and the 21st best run block unit. ESPN had the Packers as the 6th best pass block win weight unit, but the 19th best run block. So I think we can safely say that their run blocking leaves a little bit to be desired, and they're going to have to run the ball on a cold night in Chicago on Saturday. The Bears have their own issues. The Bears have been injured all year. But the Packers are, you know, Jordan Love's been banged up. And Micah Parsons matters. I mean, he is the best pass rusher in the NFL, not named Myles Garrett. And it matters that he's not going to be there. If they had Micah Parsons, just Micah Parsons, I'd probably feel compelled to pick the Packers. But they don't. And Green Bay has really not been anything to write home about in some time. I mean, I don't know what, if you're picking Green Bay to win this game, I'm not exactly sure what you're hanging your hat on, other than the fact that they generally own and therefore kick the shit out of the Bears. if you're just gonna operate in a space that, well, they just kill the Bears all the time, then yeah, sure, I guess you could do that. But the Packers also have lost 4 in a row to end the season. Like, that's pretty wild. They beat the Bears in Green Bay with a game-sealing interception on the final play. And then after that, they lost to the Broncos, the Bears, the Ravens, and the Vikings to close out the year. So I don't know how you could really suggest that they're ready for the, like they're ready to beat the Bears. They don't do anything. They're not great at anything at this point. So Give me the Bears. At least we know the Bears can turn you over. We know that Caleb is clutch. He's been clutch all year. We know the Bears can run the ball. And their defense leads the league in picks. So these are all things that I think will serve them well in this game. And we know that the Bears are going to be really good at evading Micah Parsons on Saturday night, because Micah Parsons ain't going to be there. So I'll take the Bears. I'll take them to win and cover. Not for nothing, but when I was at that Browns-Bears game, the game was got out of hand pretty quickly. Or, you know, by the third quarter, it was well decided. Bears fans took it upon themselves to break into multiple F the Packers chants during the course of the game. So, yeah, I think they're going to be ready, too, for that game. Sunday, the Bills from Buffalo are 1.5-point favorites at Jacksonville. If you listen to this podcast at all for the last couple of years, you know how I feel about Jacksonville, specifically their quarterback. He ain't that good, but I got to give him his credit. He's been balling the last 4 to 6 weeks. Trevor Lawrence has probably been the best quarterback in football the last 4 to 6 weeks. It's a small sample, but it counts. He's doing it. Leon Combe has resurrected his career, essentially, at this point. And speaking of teams that are among the top in the league in forcing interceptions, the Bears are first, the Jags are second, right behind them. So this game's going to feel, it feels like this game's going to come down to turnovers, whether or not they can force Josh Allen into trying to play superhuman football and they can get a mistake or two out of him as a result. The one thing that really worked in the Jags' favor this season was that they traded their first-round pick to the Cleveland Browns. That was their ticket to the playoffs. Once they had no safety net of a first-round pick, but it was destined to go to Cleveland, the most snake-bitten organization this side of the LA Clippers, yeah, that was a brilliant move by their general manager because... Just give your pick to the Browns and you'll go to the playoffs. Like, nobody had Jacksonville doing what they're done this year. It's inexplicable. It can only be explained by they gave the Browns their pick. That's how. I like the Bills in this game. I'm still not a believer in Jacksonville. I know they're playing well. They're on an incredible hot streak. They've won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row, including wins over the Broncos and the Chargers, a couple playoff teams in there. So, you know, they're red hot right now. So you got to give Jacksonville a ton of credit for that. They figured something out down there. They're not making mistakes. They're playing within themselves. This is another game that's going to be decided in the trenches. Buffalo's the best rushing team in the league. Jacksonville is the best run defense in the league. Jacksonville's going to be at home. So you kind of feel like maybe that works to their advantage. The crowd's going to be going nuts. Those holes are going to be closing up quick. But if Josh Allen just decides to go and throw the cape on, you know, I'm going to start running around, and you're going to have to respect my ability to run, and then you're still going to have to account for James Cook, who led the league in rushing, then it becomes a different ball game. Conversely, the Bills' pass defense is among the best in the league. In fact, they've given up the fewest yards per game through the air this year. So, and even though Buffalo's going on the road here, I mean, it's not like people seem to be kind of down on the Bills for some reason. I mean, they're still, what were they? They didn't win a division. Maybe that's why, but they still finished 12-5. You know, against a tough schedule. I mean, Baltimore nearly made the playoffs. They beat Baltimore in the first week of the season. They came back and beat the Patriots late in the season. They had a narrow loss to the Eagles. You know, they beat the Chiefs when the Chiefs were still viable. They beat the brakes off the Steelers. You know, I think the Bills are battle tested, man. I mean, they've been in big games. They've had this quarterback and this coach together have been in very big games before. They've been in AFC Championship games. They've been in so many playoff games. This is all still new to the Jags. Trevor Lawrence, we've seen him in the playoffs 1 year earlier. In his first game, he threw 4 picks in the first half. Miraculously, he won the game. The second week, I mean, to his credit, because he threw four TDs in the second half. In the second game, he was mediocre against Kansas City, and Jacksonville lost a winnable game there. I'm not a Trevor Lawrence believer. I am a Josh Allen believer. And it took time for me to be a Josh Allen convert, but I'm a believer, okay? So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to take the Bills to win and cover in Jacksonville. I want to shout out my boy, Terry Palmer, who he and I have had numerous arguments on the phone, and we're going to get it on the podcast soon enough. I just can't schedule anything to save my life. But we've had numerous conversations going back to the beginning of the year about the Philadelphia Eagles, where I called them an elite team at the beginning of the year and maintained that they were an elite team throughout the year. And he said the opposite. And we made a wager that the Eagles would make it back to the NFC title game this year. Well, their title defense starts on Sunday, where they host the San Francisco 49ers. They're 4.5-point favorites. I don't love the 4.5 number, because if you watch the Eagles this year, it's hard to predict them to beat anybody by 4.5 points. And this is kind of why I when I think back to our debate about the Eagles, I feel like we were both right. I feel like we were both right, because he felt that the Eagles, if you watch how they played, they're not playing anything like what they played like last year. So while part of my case was they brought back largely the same team from last year, he's like, but they're not the same team from last year, and you can see it in how they play. And he's right in that Philadelphia has made everything look difficult this year. Nothing has looked easy for them. On the flip side, they had a pretty impossible schedule, and they beat a lot of teams. And it wasn't always pretty, but they have 11 wins this year. And those wins came against the likes of the Chiefs in Kansas City when they were still something, against the Rams, against the Packers, against the Lions when people thought they were something, against the Bills. We know the Eagles can play. We know that they're experienced. They just went to the show last year and won it. I don't know what's going on with their offensive line. It doesn't appear to be the same offensive line as it was last year. The defense is still very solid, though. So between the experience and the defense, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. But their offensive line leaves a lot to be desired. Now, if you go by PFF standards, they were 7th in run blocking, or excuse me, 7th in pass blocking and 12th in run blocking. If you watch the Eagles play football games, I don't see any holes getting opened up in the run game. I see a lot of dudes with the other jersey in the backfield talking to Saquon Barkley before he even gets going. And the passing game, even if they can block for Jalen Hurts, the passing game has been listless all season. But the Eagles still finished 11-5, as I pointed out. They still won their division. They're still hosting a playoff game in round one. And a lot of the other teams that my man Terry said were elite teams when he said the Eagles were not an elite team, those teams are finished. Teams like the Ravens and the Lions and the Chiefs. These are all teams that he had above the Eagles at the start of the season. Those teams are nowhere to be found. So I feel like I was right in that regard. I feel like he was right in regards to the Eagles' eyeball test. We're going to find out on Sunday what they're really made of. I feel like there's a world in which the Eagles could lose for sure. I just don't feel like the Niners are in a position to take advantage and be that team. The Niners' offensive line is good when Trent Williams is in there, but he's not always in there because he's almost as old as me. And what's worse about the 49ers is they get no pressure whatsoever on the quarterback. They were dead last in the league in sacks this year. They were dead last in the league in sacks this year. So if there was ever an opportunity for the Eagles to get right in terms of their offense and their offensive line, this is probably the week to do it. And I like the 49ers more than most. I like Brock Purdy more than most. But the Niners are one of the most injured teams in the league this year. And they lost a ton of key players. Guys like Fred Warner and Nick Bosa, for instance. So it's not just injuries. We're talking injuries to their best players, specifically on defense. And that is why, it's large part the reason why they haven't gotten any pressure on the quarterback. It's amazing that they made it this far when you think about that, and they won all those games. Now, they had a weak schedule too. The Eagles had a very challenging schedule in my estimation. The Niners, outside of their division, had a very weak schedule. So the Niners could win it. I'm going to take the Eagles to win. I'm going to take the Niners to cover. I'm not going to feel super great about it. I'm going to close my eyes and squint. I'm going to close and squint my eyes and swallow the medicine and just hope that it works out for Philly. Chargers and Patriots. As I mentioned earlier, I believe Drake May should win MVP. The Patriots are 3.5-point favorites at home. The Chargers have literally the worst offensive line in football that's not named the Cleveland Browns backups. So I don't know. Again, I don't know how they've made it this far. I mean, it's a testament to Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert that they made it this far. Justin Herbert's banged up, and the Chargers have been pretty banged up for much of the year. And for their offensive line to be missing those tackles and for them to be still standing is something. But I can't see them playing a good team in New England and having success. Now, the Patriots are a young team. They haven't been there before and all that stuff, but Mike Vrabel has. I think the Patriots' offensive lines is one of the better ones in the league. So I think that they're going to have a distinct advantage on that side of the ball. And I just feel like they're not going to fall on their face. Vrabel's not going to allow them to fall on their face like these other teams might. I do believe in the Chargers. It's weird, man. Like I think the Chargers can win. I just don't think they will. So I wouldn't be shocked if they pulled off the upset. But I feel like Drake May's been so locked in this year. The Patriots, in spite of their laughably weak schedule, they are one of the healthiest teams in the league. And those healthy teams do a lot of damage in the playoffs. In fact, the Patriots, Rams, and Seahawks were three of the most fortunate teams in terms of health. And that might be why they were awesome this year. Like, those teams stayed healthy. If the Cleveland Browns, as presently constituted, was the healthiest team in the league, they'd be in the playoffs right now. They wouldn't have had half the problems that they ran into. Not to say that they were the most banged up team, but that offensive line stuff was real. So I'll take the Patriots to win and cover, but I think the Chargers are a legitimately dangerous opponent. And I think the Patriots, it's imperative that they get off to a good start. You don't want the Chargers hanging around and believing that they can steal that game. Justin Herbert also has a lot to prove because he's had some clunkers in the playoffs. And no time like the present, man. Like, your peers are Patrick Mahomes, too, and Josh Allen, too. It's time for you to get off your ass and make some noise in games that really count. He had an unbelievable meltdown at Houston last year. He needs to right the ship. We'll see if he can pull it off. And lastly, on Monday night, the Texans are 3.5-point favorites at Pittsburgh. I've actually gone back and forth on this game because I don't think the Steelers are good. They're not good. They're not good. Their defense looks good, but it's not that good. Their offense seems like it could be good. It's not that good either. Their kicker's really good. I watched him miss an extra point in crunch time a few days ago. I mean, the Steelers don't. They just kind of wind up winning these games. They're really good at winning games, but they're not a good football team. They just know how to not beat themselves. Houston's defense, there are some metrics that say they're outstanding. There are other metrics that say they're just pretty good. But we know that they got two guys that can really get after the passer. And we know they have one of the better secondaries in the league. So it's going to be incumbent upon Aaron Rodgers to deploy the Myles Garrett, strategy. Let me get the ball out in 1.1 seconds on every throw because I don't want to get hit at age 42. And that's it. I don't want to get hit at age 42. So I don't know, but I don't know how they're going to take advantage of DK Metcalf's return getting rid of the ball that fast. I think it's going to be a rabid environment in Pittsburgh, but I think Houston's been there before. I think this is their third straight year in the playoffs. They've had road games against the likes of the Ravens a couple of years ago, which were far better than this Steelers team. And they were hanging in with the Ravens until the end. So I'll begrudgingly take the Texans, but I don't love it. I feel like Houston is kind of a trendy, dark horse Super Bowl pick. I'm not going to go that far, but I'll take them to win. I'll take the Steelers to cover just out of respect, even though I really don't respect the Steelers or anything about them, but like I guess just because they find ways to do these things, like it's hard to take them as a home or not take them as a home underdog. So I'll take the Steelers to cover the three, but I'll take the Texans to win the game because I think they're a better football team, and I think the Steelers have been masquerading as a good football team for pretty much the last 3.5 months. So there you have it. Quick recap. I got the Rams, Bears, Bills, Eagles, Patriots, and Texans advancing. But I have the Panthers, Bears, Bills, 49ers. I don't know if I said that. 49ers, Patriots, and Steelers covering. I took the Niners because I didn't like that 4.5 number. But yeah, there you have it. Those are my wild card picks. Got y'all out of here a few minutes earlier than usual. Thank you for listening. I don't know where my Browns are going, man. Hopefully it's to the top. They've been in the basement for far too long, and there's no place to go but up. I hope to be talking to you about the Cleveland Browns in the playoffs exactly 1 year from now. But we'll see. They got to get the right guy and a head coach, and they got to figure out the quarterback situation and have another great draft. If they can somehow do those three things, then they will be in the playoffs next year. I'm not optimistic about it. I've been beaten down too long, man. Jay Hicks is signing off. Thank y'all for listening. I don't know how I'm going to convey my division around picks. Maybe I'll put them in an article for once. Maybe I'll do another short podcast, a shorter podcast than this one. But we'll talk to y'all about it in some form or fashion next week. Enjoy the games, y'all. We out. Peace.